proposal 17, 5AEC 03350, both waters, C1, require the regulatory marker buoy opposite Chris Point in Subdistrict 1 of the Yukon District to be a distinctive color other than red.
Move for adoption. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Yeah?
Yes, just what kind of a red buoy are you using there? Just a plastic or wooden cake or something?
Well, the present regulation says just to a buoy. And this proposal, which we support, would require a buoy be a distinctive color other than red. And it's more of a housekeeping type proposal, which would facilitate identification of the boundary buoy over there. Presently, all the buoys out there are, fishermen are red, and the fishermen claim they have a hard time distinguishing our buoy from their buoy. This past year, for example, we took three red buoys and tied them together, you know, mark fishing game on it. But I think they would prefer to see it, but it just seems in regulation book. This is more clearly spelled out.
Okay. Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, is there any reason that we can't put the pea green buoys out instead of the red buoys?
There's no reason we couldn't. We just haven't decided what color to use, what kind of marking system to use on the buoy.
Further discussion? All those in favor of this motion to adopt, raise your right hand. Opposed? Objected? And the staff will handle this as management.
Yes, we will, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Proposal 18, 5AEC 03360, quotas 1A, change the dates when the quota for fall chum salmon become effective from July 15th to August 1st in Subdistrict 1, from July 18th to August 1st in Subdistrict 2, and from July 21st to August 1st in Subdistrict 3 of the Yukon District. In addition, once the season opens for fall chum salmon, fishing would continue until the 200,000 combined subdistrict quota is reached.
Do you have a motion on this one?
Move for adoption.
Second?
Second.
Okay, go ahead and explain.
Mr. Chairman, this is a proposal which would provide for a later effective date when the 200,000 quota for fall chum salmon would take place in the lower Yukon. And presently, we have a regulation that states that after mid-July, that we would start counting toward the 200,000 chum salmon quota. What this proposal would do, it would allow for an increase harvest of the early run fall chum salmon and result in an overall increase of fall chum salmon above the present harvest quotas. And I could show a transparency here, which would point this out.
Okay.
shows the relative timing of the salmon runs. The second curve is the summer chums, and the third curve is the fall chums. And the present regulation says that the quota takes effect in mid-July where the blue marker is placed. And as you can see, this is right at the beginning of the fall chums and the salmon run. And this public proposal here would change the date to August 1st, which is near the peak of the fall chums. And we would have to start counting toward the 200,000 quota at this time. And you can see would allow for an increased harvest of the early portion of the fall chum harvest. And I'd like to point out that last year the board rejected a similar proposal for Subdivision 1, which would essentially accomplish the same thing.
Discussion? There's no discussion. All those in favor of this motion to adopt 18, raise your right hand. Opposed? 18 rejected.
Proposal 19A, 5AAC03360, quotas 1C, delay effective date for the combined quota of chum and total salmon for subdivision 4 in Cunningham District.
Move for adoption. Is there a second? Discussion? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, this proposal is similar to the one we just discussed. It would effectively lengthen the commercial fishing season in Subdistrict 4 by 1 week. We're not sure at this time whether the fish harvested during this additional period would come from the summer or fall run. Certainly there's some overlap here and some variability from year to year. We're currently conducting a tagging program in this area, which would further define time of migration through this area, and we would recommend rejection of this proposal at this time.
Sam?
Is this number 19, correct?
19A. We've already taken care of 19. Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
You say you're against this?
At this time, we are, yes.
Further discussion? Sam, do you have any further on this one?
No, I just wanted to say that all Sidney said it was that he was trying to see if he could get the extra five days back, and he really didn't have any hard feelings if it was left the way it was.
Further discussion?
Nick? Well, he told me he was going to have a lot of hard feelings.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor of this motion to adopt, raise your right hand. Opposed? Rejected.
Scared of Sydney, aren't you?
Proposal 20, 5AAC03360, quotas 1D, allocate a separate quota for Subdistrict 5B of the Yukon District.
Motion on this one?
Oh, okay. Second.
The crux of the problem here is that Subdistrict 5, the Yukon District, is approximately 550 miles long. The Subdistrict boundary is below Tantwa. It shows there on the left side of the screen, 60 miles below Tanana, and extends to the Canadian border. And depending on effort and fishing conditions at Tanana and Rampart, where most of the effort concentrates in District 5, it's possible that the entire king salmon quota and chum salmon quota, for that matter, can be taken in this part of the subdistrict before it even reaches the upper portion of the drainage. This did happen in 1973. Staff suggests that if the board does choose to reallocate this quota, we not end up in any net increase.
Further discussion on 20? Dick?
Well, what's the present quota there now?
3,000 kings and after all, it's 15,000 to 25,000 Sherman coal combined.
Further discussion? Sam, do you have anything on this? No further discussion. All those in favor of this motion to adopt, raise your right hand. Opposed? Rejected?
Quotas. 2. Create a separate quota of 2,000 cobalt ton in subdistrict 2 of the Kuskokwim district rather than the present quota of 2,000 red chum cobalt sand combined.
Move for adoption. Second.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this involves subdistrict number 2 of the Kuskokwim district. This is the upstream area on the Kuskokwim. At present, there is a 2,000 quota for king salmon and a second separate quota for 2,000 chum, red, and cobalt salmon combined. So there's, in fact, two quotas. The cobalt salmon run in August, and in most seasons, the fishery hasn't been closed in either late June or July because of the taking of the other two quotas. The net increase in total catch as a result of this proposal would probably be less than 2,000 fish. And this is because the second quota, 2,000 chum red head, is normally not taken because these species are mainly captured incidentally to the king salmon. And when the king salmon quota which is usually taken, we close the fishery until the majority of the kings pass through this area, and then by the time we would reopen, the chums and reds are gone too, because they do run concurrently. The effect on management, if this proposal was adopted, for example, is relatively nil. It probably wouldn't result in any reallocation of quotas or harvest between sub-districts. So therefore, the staff doesn't really have much comment on this one way or another, except the only comment that I would have, if it adopted, it shouldn't be regarded as setting a precedent for next year coming in with a little bit larger increase. When it reaches a point of no return, the board would have to start reallocating quotas and harvests between different sub-districts of the country.
Discussion?
Well, now, is the timing of the reds and the chums different from the cohos, or is it just a mixed bag?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the kings, chums, and reds run in June and through mid-July, and the cohos don't begin going up that way until into the month of August. And I could put a graph or a table showing the key catches that are made. This is since 66. This is the king salmon catch. We have a 2,000 quota. Some years it hasn't been taken, other years it's been exceeded. We can't hit the quota right on the head. A couple of years it's been 76. 71 it's been exceeded by several dollars. Most years the chum red coho quota, it's a combined chum red coho, isn't usually taken because the season is closed because of the combined catch of chum red during June, July doesn't allow for any further fishing in August for coho. This is what I say, if adopted, most times we'll never take the chum red quota because the king's salmon quota will be exceeded first. We have to close the season, wait for the king's to pass, and then wouldn't probably be reopened until a date that most of the chums in the region are turned off.
Yeah.
Okay, say assuming that you filled your chum red. Well, now, so then after the kings have passed through, then you would open it up for a chum red quota, right? Would you have any incidental take of silver or zen, or?
Well, I would give an example. What takes place most years is that the season runs for 4 days a week there. We'd be fishing periods, and usually after about a week fishing, the king salmon quota is taken, and they're fishing mainly with 8.5-inch gillnets. They will take 2,000 king salmon and a few hundred chums and reds. Because the king salmon quota has been exceeded, you close the fishery because you can't keep kings out of, you know, in pods. If you kept the fishery open for chums and reds, you have a king salmon harvest waiting, you know, greatly exceeding the quota, whether it be reported or not. And by the time we reopen under these circumstances, after the king salmon run has passed through the sub-district, for all intents and purposes, most years there aren't any chums or reds left. And there is only cobles. Some years, fishermen have just worked out that the incidental capture chums and reds and kings have both been about 2,000. As you can see, 72. And 72 is one example. In that case, you know, the season remained closed and there was no August fishery at all.
Yeah, okay. So then if you did reopen it later in the summer, they'd be fishing on kind of a mixed stock of reds and chums and cobos then, right? And then under this proposal, you could say take up to 2,000 reds and chums, and then you'd have to shut the season down theoretically until the reds and chums got out of the area. And then you could reopen it again and take up to 2,000 cobles.
Yeah, this is sort of complicated, but as we see it, the net effect, they're proposing an additional 2,000 quota. But because of the coincidence, because these runs, especially kings and chums and reds, all run together, and you have to close the king quota when it's taken, the net effect would be less than, most years, less than 2,000 additional total salmon taken.
Okay. Well, can you stand, an increase in the chum red harvest that this would allow it? Plus maybe an additional coho harvest?
That was a question we got put on the spot in Bethel. It was a good question, you know. 2,000 additional harvest of either one of these two species, would this affect our management program? Would we have to do something differently in sub-district number one, cut down fishing time, and the levels of harvest, you know, we had to say no involved here. And our main concern is not the small level of harvest, that we should be regarded as some precedent for future expansion of this fishery.
Further discussion? 21? Tab, you have anything?
Just on the last sentence here on the justification, it says that the sub-district 1 fishermen have agreed to a small increase in the sub-district 2 chum harvest.
Well, there was a meeting in Bethel, one of the first meetings that we had, where representatives of all villages came together to say, the Kuskokwim Fishermen's Association, and some of the representatives from Sub-District 2 asked representatives of Sub-District 1 if they would mind that their quota was up 2,000 fish, and the general consensus was that no, they wouldn't mind. That's what that statement came from.
Uh,
sure, I, let me see if I got this right though, but the thing they overlooked was that the fish had got to come from somewhere. Is that the idea, right? You know, they ask them if they would mind if they took 2,000 more or whatever, but the fish have got to come from somewhere. I mean, you don't just pick up 2,000 fish out of the air. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they would have to come from somewhere else. If there was the downstream subdistrict, Subdistrict 1 had a quota, or the Kuskokwim River had a quota, you know, if you increase the quota in Subdistrict 2 by 2,000, of course, you'd have to decrease the quota in Subdistrict 1 by 2,000. But we don't presently manage any of the Kuskokwim District fisheries or river fisheries in that way.
But in reality, to get escapement, you take it into consideration, right?
That's correct. And,
well, I mean, on paper, you're not cutting somebody down, but in reality, you are. That's what it really gets down to, right?
But
the
weight.
Go
ahead, the question was asked, and it's a valid question, if, you know, we caught 2,000 more fish in subdistrict number 2, would that necessitate a different management strategy, regulatory framework in subdistrict number 1? And in all honesty, I still think I had to answer no, that it wouldn't. The 2,000 fish in terms of the overall harvest of 800,000 cobos and a harvest of a couple hundred thousand chums is, you know, I don't know what we would have to do to take an hour off the weekly fishing period or half an hour or what to compensate for this. I don't know if I've answered your question. I don't know how to answer your question, I guess.
Nick, go ahead.
Well, why is Subdistrict 2 the only one that you have a quota in?
This is a regulation that's been on the book for years and existed for fish and game in the state. It's a fish and wildlife hangover, and it was just to, as far as I can determine, to allow for a very small fishery, probably at one time mostly smoke strips sail, just like it, you know, was for the upper Yukon. And you know, we certainly don't have any wish to see a great expansion in any subject in the upper subdistrict fisheries, because from a management standpoint, administrative standpoint, it becomes more and more impossible to manage fisheries when you extend the river for miles and miles and miles.
Well, I mean, like in the Yukon area, you have quotas for each subdistrict. I mean, is there any reason not to have quotas for the other sub-districts in the Kuskokwim area, or you can manage it without a quota?
The big difference between the two river fisheries is that the fishing effort, quite intensive fishing effort, occurs over 1,000 miles in the Yukon, and really in the Kuskokwim, traditionally, up to this day, it exists mainly in the lower 100 miles. And the Kuskokwim, from that standpoint, is a much easier, controllable, manageable fishery. The board has been, you know, the department is forced to go to quotas in the Yukon because of the people want to catch three times what's there. And it was the only seemingly solution to handle this situation.
Further discussion? All those in favor of this motion to adopt, raise your right hand. We have four. Okay. Adopted.
Proposal 22, 5AAC 03370, registration and re-registration. F, new subsection, specify that each fisherman may register gear and vessels in only one subject of the Yukon District.
I move for adoption.
Second.
Do we have a second?
At the present time, only one fisherman has taken advantage of this loophole. Part of the staff is concerned about the potential for others to do so at the sub-district 5 and 6 junction and near the village of Tanlaw.
Yeah, overlay on that.
The intent of the original regulation, which restricted fishermen, we thought restricted fishermen to one sub-district rather, was to preserve the relatively small quotas for those residing within those areas or fishing within those areas, and prevent people from, for instance, catching the king salmon quota in District 4, moving upstream, hitting District 5, and it wouldn't really be possible to do so in District 6. But this prevents this upstream migration of fishermen following the run of salmon. As I say, the potential exists for several more people to take advantage of this loophole at the village of Tanlaw. It's just 4 or 5 miles from the village to the Tanlaw River sub-district 6.
Okay. Well, now, would this just replace them C, D, and E, or what? Because C, D, and E all apply to the same thing. I mean, they're all trying to get at the same thing, but in different ways, I think.
Would replace be a new subsection.
Yeah, but I mean, do you need C, D, and E if you have this? Because C says if you're in 3, you can't transfer to 1 and 2, and D says if you're in 1, 2, and 3, you can't transfer to 4, 5, and 6. And D says if you're in 4, 5, and 6, you can't go anyplace else. I mean, aren't you trying to accomplish all that with just this one?
Excuse me, what the proposal would do is it would say that the fisherman would have to register his gear and vessel in only one sub-district. The loophole is that a fisherman is registering a set gill net in one sub-district and a fish whale in another sub-district. And that wasn't the intent of the present regulations. And C and D just refer to gear and vessels as the specified gear types. This regulation proposal here would say in the Yukon District, a fisherman may register geared vessels in only one sub-district. Of course, we have different, various parts of the Yukon may be different.
Any discussion, Nick?
Yeah, but I mean, doesn't adopting this eliminate the need for CD&E, or do you still have to have CD&E?
Well, we do have to have CD&E because these regulations are tuned to the various types of fishes we have in these areas. C, for example, we don't have quotas. King's salmon quotas in sub-districts 1 and 2, for example. And there's a traditional interchange between these areas. And D, for example, states that fishermen in the lower Yukon may not transfer to the upper Yukon. And E, for example, says gears and vessels in 4, 5, and 6 may not transfer to another sub-district. And all that does is just closes a loophole in the present regulation where one fisherman is taking advantage of this by registering one type of gear in one sub-district and another type of gear in another sub-district.
Okay, Nick?
Yeah, okay. But even if we pass this, you can still transfer back and forth then as long as you register in one sub-district, though.
Only in C where the fisherman can transfer back and forth between 1 and 2. After July 10th, fishermen from subdivision 3 to go down 1 and 2. It's kind of complicated. I say each fisheries have traditional histories of fishing, and we have quotas in some, and not quotas in others.
Yeah, okay, well, the way I understand it now, if you're in 4, 5, or 6, then that's where you stay. I mean, you can't transfer any place if you're in either 4, 5, or 6.
That's correct.
And then if you're in 1, 2, or 3, you can transfer within 1, 2, and 3, but you can't go on up to 4, 5, or 6.
Correct.
And if you're in 3, you can't transfer to 1 and 2 until after July 10th.
That's correct. Another problem with this regulation as it applies to the upriver sub-districts is the fishermen fishing in districts 4 and 5, for instance, could operate as set net or fish oil in district 4. The open days are shown, there's windows here, Monday through Friday, and then move to district 5 during the closed period of district 4 and fish Saturday and Sunday there and essentially be able to fish 7 days a week.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, is it really that much of a management problem? I mean, if a guy is really that much of a go-getter, I mean, is it really that bad? If it, you know, I mean, some guys probably don't want to fish more than 3 days a week, but other guys, you know, they're real ambitious. Unless it's a real management problem, I don't see why you gotta restrain him. You know?
As I say, it potentially exists for others to do this, other people possessing both set net permits and fish bill permits. And at this time, not all of the permanent permits have been issued for the Upper Yukon districts. And we don't know how many fishermen would fall into this category. So we don't know what the effect would be if it remains as is.
Would this affect the subsistence fishermen anyway?
Further discussion?
Yeah, did you talk to this one single fisherman that was complaining about this?
Yeah, several times.
No, what about the party?
Hello? Mr. Chairman, it won't seem that. I think I see what Fred is getting at here now. I have to admit that took a while to sort it out. It would seem to me that if this was done on a wide scale basis, that we could, in fact, because of split between the chum quotas and the king quotas, we could in fact have some help in the lower sub-district to put additional fish into another area upriver. In other words, a little help on the king harvest could conceivably close the lower sub-district and put additional chums upriver for the upriver fishing.
Mr. Chairman, the all of the three upper sub-districts have 5D during the commercial fishing season. They can fish for commercial and subsistence purposes 5 days a week. There's two days a week complete closure. All and the problem is the based on again employment patterns and traditional fishing methods. Each of these sub-districts have different weekend fishing periods. They're all 5 days long, but they begin and open on different days. And what's happened is that the loophole with a lot of people, there would be no problem with, you know, if we knew it was only going to be one fisherman. It doesn't make the kingers darn, but if many fishermen caught on to this and began moving to these sub-district boundaries and registered his fish well in the just above the line in 5 and just like you said, that just below the line in 4, he then fishes 7 days a week. And the reason for the closure is to get, you know, some balance between harvest and escapement. And, you know, if we had pretty good indications that no one else was going to do this, we would certainly take the time to bother the board with this proposal. But there is a possibility that others could do this.
Better discussion.
Not them. Yeah. Could it increase the air taxi service pretty good?
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor of this motion, raise your right hand. Those opposed? Adopted.
Chairman's going to be mad at
send us a war notice.
Number 23. AAC03.805, sale of salmon roe. 5AAC03.810, salmon roe sales prohibited. Prohibit the sale of subsistence salmon roe in the AYK area by deleting these sections.
Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I gave a report earlier covering this issue and tried to present both benefits and problems involved with the low sales fishery. Certainly, you know, we have documented wastage and misuse of the resource and apparent overfishing, but these have been only for specific areas and times. I think the question that must be asked, you know, by the board and the legislature is that are the present regulatory regulations and present management approach and present enforcement program adequate to keep these potential violations down to some acceptable level? Because if they aren't, then these controls on the roe fishery do prove to be ineffective, then one possible consequence will be I think people must then change the definition, the concept of subsistence fishing, and possibly along with it, this you know, highest priority use ranking could change. Prohibiting subsistence roe sales would not necessarily eliminate the problem. As the commissioner pointed out, that black marketing would still be a potential problem. We could maybe with an aggressive management education enforcement program might be able to control it adequately in places like the Kuskokwim, where all the wires are centrally located. On the other hand, we would have problems in the upper Yukon. No question about it. We have a scattering of buyers and fly-out fisheries. I don't think I can add a whole lot. I think the issue personally rests with the legislature. They're the ones that legalized it, and it's going to come before the entire legislature and this session. I think the staff is looking for a lot of direction on this matter from both the legislature and the board.
Yeah. Yes, Ron, I think you said earlier in your testimony they take about 100,000 salmon per week for subsistence purposes. Did you have the overall figure taken for the year?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the region. There's about 500,000 to 600,000 salmon taken during the year. And in the early 60s, this was around 800,000, 700,000. It declined in the mid-60s to 400,000 or 500,000. And it's, in the last 2-3 years, has made some moderate increase. The 100,000 weekly figure was what the Kuskokwim River can produce some years. 100,000 fish in 1 week during the height of the King and Chum.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I read all the material here and I called the question. I think it's pretty self-explanatory. Well, I think, you know, I don't know, even if we adopt this or we don't, it's really not going to change anything, but I think, you know, the board should give some direction to the legislature as well, whether they think this thing should continue or they shouldn't, you know. I mean, I think we're the ones that should kind of set the trend there as to if it's a good idea or a bad idea.
Jim?
Yeah, well, you know, I raised the question, I'll discuss it also. They're not,
I think tightening it up, it's pointed out, I think, in detail by both Rick Nard and everyone else that had anything to do with it, that they just black market it anyway. So the only alternative I see open to us is to have a sale of subsistence eggs under as controlled manner as possible to alleviate abuses. That's about all I can see that we can do with it.
Yes, a little bit like Dick there. If I'm not mistaken, I believe it's supposed to come up for legislative review this coming session. Anybody know about that?
Mr. Chairman, when that legislation was adopted, they put an expiration date on it, which is December 31st. So in order for this to be renewed, the legislature does have to take affirmative action during the next session and basically pass a new law. So I'd ask for my performance.
Yeah, well, I'd like to ask Jeff, if we are we required to keep adopting regulations to make this better, even though the act itself will expire in 2 weeks, or just what's the board's obligation in this regard?
Well, it seems to me that if you adopt regulations under authority of that law and that law expires, then your authority for those regulations is gone, so the regulations would be also.
But I mean, if the legislature reaffirms this, then do any existing regulations automatically become effective then? Or would we have to start all over again?
Well, if they didn't, make any specific recommendations, I think you'd have to do something else. Now, of course, one thing you could do, I suppose, would be to adopt what you want now and give the commissioner a delegation of authority to readopt those regulations, you know, if the legislature passed the bill again. The other thing that do, and imagine will do when this thing comes up is, and we are asked to testify on it, as I presume it will be to recommend that the regulations be, that a provision put in the bill to carry over those previous regulations to the board under the new law.
Yeah, I just didn't know whether by adopting amendments to the present regulations, whether we were automatically being put in a position of advocating that the sale be continued, or whether we were
you may decide, you may wish to express your feelings this way, that you're going to adopt regulations on the assumption that this thing may continue. That doesn't necessarily mean that your action is an endorsement, but you're assuming that you're saying that if in fact it is continued, you certainly want to have some regulations on the books to control it. But I would hope that also the board would formal recommendation to the legislature through the adoption of a resolution or whatever you want, however you want to do it, as to whether or not you want that authority continued and in what form.
Yeah, well, I'm not completely sure in my mind whether it's the best thing to continue this thing area-wide at all. Perhaps it should be stopped altogether in certain areas where there's been problems and allowed to continue in some of the areas where it's worked. I don't see any obligation to have an all or nothing type attitude about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Of course, I'm not sure exactly how you mean to implement that kind of limited authority. You can do that by regulation or you can do it legislatively. The problem you run into legislatively is that it's not part of the change, in fact, circumstances change.
No, I mean, as an expression of opinion to the legislature, I don't see what would there be anything to prevent us from saying, well, in certain areas it's really not a valid utilization of the subsistence lifestyle or whatever, and that it should be discontinued, but that we could permit it in some areas where it has a significant meaning. I mean, couldn't the legislature, if they thought it was advisable in certain areas, couldn't they permit it in some areas and not in others?
It may be that you might get into, well, we can go back one step. When the legislature adopts legislation of this kind, they like not to get too detailed because it causes problems in the deliberation process. I think they'd probably prefer to make some rather general authority, something that
Yeah, well, that's the only question before us here is, the proposal is to tighten up the regulations at the present time to alleviate as much abuse as possible. I've advocated we do this through this particular proposal, or addressing ourselves to the overall question of the subsistence thing in the AYK areas. It's obvious we have to crack out a resolution supporting or not supporting it, as far as getting specific to the area. I think it's going to be awfully hard to determine how much abuse is and by who and where and all these value judgments related to that. I would rather address ourselves just to the problem, the question of indeed whether we would like to see them throw the eggs away, subsistence, that's what we're...